Coming up on today's Locked On Dodgers, the Dodgers salvage Game 3 in a big way. Cody Bellinger comes up with one of the biggest Dodger postseason home runs we've seen in our lifetime. And a lot of other things happen. Walker Buehler not so great. Gavin Lux had an interesting play. But in the end, the Dodgers won and all is good at the time. So that's what's coming up on Locked On Dodgers.
You are Locked On Dodgers. Your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Yo, 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 Dodger fans, welcome to Locked On Dodgers. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and we want to thank you for making us your first listen every day. We are free and available on all platforms, and YouTube is included in those platforms. Today's episode is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Download the app and join us every week to get in on the action. The Dodgers won Game 3 last night after a big three-run home run from Cody Bellinger, a big RBI double from Mookie Betts, and a shutdown ninth inning by Kenley Jansen. It all made up for kind of how the first seven innings weren't fun. The last two innings were very fun. And yeah, Jeff, I'm still excited. This is reminiscent of the wildcard game, which I was also there as credential media. So far I've had two really good games as with the Badger on my neck.
And you went and stood in the same place, right?
I did. Before that eighth inning, I was just looking for some vibes. Went to go stand where I stood for that. And, three batters later, or however many batters it was, the game was tied.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was a depressing game for a long time. And even the most optimistic of us had started to think, crap, this might not happen. And then it happened. And you have to experience those lows to have a high like that. It reminded me a little bit of that Mets game that we've talked about a few times from 2019, a little bit of the Giants game that you and I sat together at earlier this year when Will Smith hit the walk-off home run. Some of those games where the more it sucks earlier in the game, the better it is when they finally come through.
Yeah, and Cody Bellinger, for it to be Cody Bellinger, we've talked about him a lot so far this October. He's come through a few times already and is starting. I think he's erased for the most part what the 2021 season, regular season was. He's come through enough here. And if it become, if it leads to the Dodgers making it back to the World Series, this home run probably becomes a little bit greater in the grand scheme of things. But it just got us thinking about the greatest Dodger postseason home runs, whether on this, not just on this 9-year run, but even back to, I guess, since 88, after the Kirk Gibson home run, there was a long stretch of nothing for the Dodgers, whether not in the postseason or not doing anything once they do get to the postseason, not until 2008 when they finally got back in, won a series. And kind of since then, there's been a lot of moments for us Dodger fans to kind of sit back on. And this Bellinger one sits right now very, very, probably maybe top five, top seven, but it could climb the list a little bit more if it becomes more important if the Dodgers make it back.
Yeah, this came on the 40th anniversary of Rick Monday's home run off the Expos in 1981. And part of the reason that one is so big is because the Dodgers eventually won the World Series. Kirk Gibson's, part of the reason it's so big is because the Dodgers eventually won the World Series. There's been some big home runs. Max Muncy's in Game 3 of 2018 World Series could have been huge. But ultimately, that was the only game the Dodgers won in that World Series. So it was a great moment for me and my sons and my dad and my uncle who were there. Probably not so much my uncle, the Giants fan, but we were there watching the game at the stadium, and it was awesome. But, it will – where this home run by Cody goes down in history will definitely adjust over the next two or weeks or so when we see what happens with the rest of this season. We talked about before we started recording last year – there were three big home runs in last year's World Series run that all three of them, without them, the Dodgers don't win the World Series. And they all came in the series against the Braves. You had Will Smith's homer off Will Smith that was huge. The Dodgers were down 3-1. They were losing in that game. And it was kind of that same feeling. They were only down by one run at the time. And so it wasn't quite the same as being down by three runs here. But Will Smith hitting a 3-run home run there was huge. And then in Game 7, Kike hit the home run to tie the game. Bellinger hits a home run to take the lead, eventually win the game. Without those three home runs, the Dodgers don't win the World Series. And so a huge home run can come in the NLCS. And even in 1988, the Dodgers don't even make it to the World Series without Mike Socha's home run off Dwight Gooden. Dwight Gooden was one of the best pitchers in baseball at that point in time. Mike Socha was not a home run hitter, and he had a home run off Dwight Gooden that was huge, you know, and it kind of gets overshadowed by Kirk Gibson. But, you know, that's kind of when they lead eventually to a World Series. So that's what got me thinking about this, was thinking if the Dodgers end up winning the World Series this year, we're going to look back on this Bellinger home run and think, wow.
Yeah, and that's really what it was, because, you know, we'll get into this later, but it was not looking great for the Dodgers. They were, you know, it's seemingly on their way to being down 0-3, and now they're down 2-1 with, you know, a chance in game four with Julio going up against the Braves bullpen game. And for Bellinger, too, you know, you think of other home runs. You think of Justin Turner's walk-off and then NLCS against the Cubs. You think of Juan Uribe's home run against the Braves back in 2013. Now, the Dodgers didn't end up making it to the World Series that year, but that was a big home run just for the fact that, you know, the Dodgers had – even 2008, 2009, they kind of made it to the NLCS both years, but you didn't really think they had a chance. The Phillies were that much better than everyone else, and the Dodgers were just kind of the next best thing. You know, they beat a good Cubs team in 2008, and they beat the Cardinals with the Matt Holliday fly ball in 2009. But you never really, you know, not how it is now. There was no World Series expectation. It was like, oh, the Dodgers made the NLCS. That's fun. You go back and look at some of those pitching rotations, and you know, you really can't figure out how the Dodgers did it. But now in this long run that the Dodgers have had, there's been a bunch of home runs like that. You know, starting with the Uribe in 2013, now down to Bellinger here in 2021, and you're just hoping that they get a couple more here that leads them to the World Series, and maybe a couple more in the World Series, and we can continue adding to this list.
Yeah, another one that kind of gets forgotten, partly because it ultimately it didn't even give them the lead. They already had the lead, and they didn't end up winning the World Series, is Yasiel Puig's home run in Game 7 of the 2018 NLCS. It came right after the great catch in the outfield by Chris Taylor. And, you know, and then Puig, the Dodgers are already up, but you look for insurance runs. And off the bat, you knew, okay, well, they're at least getting insurance runs, because it looked like a two-run double off the bat and ended up being a three-run home run. And that one, that was huge. I mean, that one brought tears to my eyes, actually made me cry, because that was when I realized the Dodgers were going back to the World Series for the second year in a row. And, you know, that was a big one. I bet there's some, though, that just kind of slip our minds, you know, like, because if it doesn't ultimately, and it's sad that that's the case, because you and I both believe that not winning the World Series doesn't make the whole rest of the season a waste, but there's something special about the ones that do lead to World Series championships.
Yeah, and definitely. And the Bellinger one, I don't know if it felt like this. You know, did you know it was a home run off the bat at home?
I did.
Okay, because from where I was standing off the bat, it looked like he got a hold of it, but it felt like the ball was in the air so long, at least at the stadium. And Jock, you know, kind of tried, he moved back. He's not like he just said, oh, that's a home run. He kind of moved back on the ball, and you're like, oh, please don't catch it at the warning track. And it was a few rows back, not even close. But, you know, it was just one of those where everything felt good. You go back, the Dodgers just posted a video from a different angle, and Dodger Stadium was loud when he hit it. And once it clears that wall, it goes up a few decibels to where, you know, that's one of the loudest I've heard Dodger Stadium in a while. And that's not, you know, just being here in the, you know, prisoner of the moment. That was one of the loudest times I've heard Dodger Stadium.
Yeah, and a three-run home run when you're down by three runs is, by definition, almost as big as you can get. You know, the only thing bigger is a grand slam when you're down by four runs, you know. And so we're going to talk a little bit more later about how important it was what they did after the home run. But that home run brought them back to life. That was, okay, this game is back in our hands. You know, well, you talked all season about how the Dodgers were letting the division get out of their control and stuff. And this game was out of their control until then. Now it was, okay, if we don't allow another run, we can't lose this game. And that's a big situation to be in.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk a little bit more here about the actual game, but we're going to come back. We're going to talk about that game. So keep it locked on Dodgers. Today's episode is brought to you by Green Room. Spotify Green Room is the first social audio platform made for sports fans. The app is free to download on all iOS devices. And once you're in, you can talk with us. You can talk with other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time about your favorite team or sport. We usually host a room every week for Locked On Dodgers, and you can finally join in on the conversation. You'll find fans just like you on Green Room for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, and of course, reacting to big news or rumors. you have a chance to chat with us or chat or start your own chat in and get in on the action wherever you need. So go download the Green Room app right now. It's free, available on all iOS devices. Create a profile, link your Twitter, and join whatever group, MLB group for us, for the latest league updates. Follow Jeff at Snydog to see if we ever go live and join us there. Green Room, changing the way we talk sports. We're back, and we want to thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. A reminder, we are free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. All right, Jeff, so real quick, let's just, right after the home run, I think the biggest part of that inning, or not the biggest part, but obviously the home run, but I think what made that inning that much better is the Dodgers didn't stop. They ended up scoring the go-ahead run, got Jansen in the ninth, and so, you know, first let's talk about scoring that run, you know, Taylor getting on, stealing second, Mookie knocking him in, and then Jansen coming in the ninth and blowing away three big-time hitters.
Yeah, it was huge. You know, tying the game was a really big deal, but following that up immediately, next batter, base hit, you know, next batter, you know, Taylor steals second, Beatty moves him over to third, Mookie drives him in. You know, it was huge, you know, getting that hit with runners in scoring position. Then they, you know, actually got another hit with runners in scoring position later that inning. Unfortunately, it went 3.5 feet. And so it was an infield single. You know, you would have loved to get even more insurance there. But yeah, the fact that right there, the offense stepped up, that's what the Dodgers offense can be. That's the offense that we know is there. That's the team that led the National League in runs scored. You know, it's because they can do things like that. And, you know, coming up there with Mookie, yeah, I felt good about that at bat. You know, it's like, okay, Mookie, you can do this. And Mookie put a great swing on it, you know. We only needed a single. He got a double. You know, everything about that was awesome. And it was exactly what they needed to, you know, it would have been a different kind of depressing if the Dodgers ended up losing that game after the Bellinger home run, if they tie it up and then the Braves score and the Braves win 6-5. And so the fact that they weren't content to stop at five runs and to put up, actually take the lead was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing too, because kind of how we saw in the first inning of the game, the Dodgers had Charlie Morton on the ropes. He's over 30 pitches, bases loaded. Chris Taylor's at the plate, and he's not able to come through. And, you know, for me, I mean, I tweeted out, and we've seen this before from the Dodgers. They've had a lot of good starting pitchers on the ropes in the first inning, get maybe one or two runs, but don't get that knockout or power punch. And then, you know, the guy ends up settling in because he's a good pitcher and ends up, you know, going five or six innings. And for the Dodgers, you just thought about that all the way through. And for as high as the moment was when Bellinger homered, I just felt like if they don't score right here when Mookie was at the plate, I think we're going to lose. And that's not even being pessimistic. It just, you know, that's when you get that high and then you don't end up getting that one hit that you need, it's just kind of a little bit deflating. They get the run and then, you know, Jansen comes in. You got Riley, Jock Peterson, and Duvall. And you're thinking like, man, those are those three.
It's the three
guys.
Most powerful hitters.
Yeah, and especially with, you know, Jock having the little bit of the matchup. And Jansen came in pumping 95, blowing it by guys, got Riley looking. It was just a dominant inning when the Dodgers needed a dominant inning.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it was scary. And we, unfortunately, the last few years have been trained to get a little bit nervous when Kenley comes in. But the Kenley we've seen in the postseason, I know he gave up a game-winning hit on the only pitch he threw on Sunday. But other than that, I mean, he has been a strikeout machine. He has been absolutely dominant. And it was seeing more of that, you know, his strikeout rate in the postseason, I mean, he's striking out almost everybody. And you know, that was not an easy inning. Austin Riley is the Braves' best hitter right now. You know, this season, he was their best hitter. Freddie Freeman is probably overall their best hitter, but Austin Riley was their best hitter this year. Jock Peterson has more power than just about anybody in baseball. And Adam Duvall could make that same claim. You know, dude's got a ton of power. And so for Kenley to come in there against those guys, for Dave Roberts to feel comfortable bringing Kenley in against those guys, and Kenley not just getting through the inning and getting the save, but telling those guys, look, you are not as good as me. That's what Kenley did. And that sets up the rest of the series too, because now it's like everybody in that stadium watched Kenley come in and dominate the Braves' best hitters. And so it's like, well, what are you going to throw at me next? You know, okay, Freddie Freeman's going to try to poke one into left field off me. Get away from me. You know, you're not as good as me. That's what Kenley Jansen said to the Braves tonight. And he was right.
Yeah. And it was great to see. Moving on to kind of before all this happened, Lockie Buehler had a not so great start, ran into trouble early in the game, kind of not aided, but helped by Gavin Lux misplay in center field, whether it was just unfamiliarity out there, the sun, combination of all those things. You know, it ended up leading a bad umpiring, call it what it is. Even we're not complaining, just kind of stating the facts there. Didn't get some calls against Jock, ended up, you know, giving up three hard hit balls after that, and Roberts came and pulled him, and the Dodgers were able to save face a little bit. Phil Bickford left one up, I don't know, a two count in the next inning or two innings later. But yeah, for Walker Buehler, it was not what we're used to, and I'm not gonna say I'm worried about that, but I was very happy with how he spoke after the game about the Gavin Lux situation and just everything else. And you know, Walker Buehler, I think he posted on his Instagram like, who cares what happened? The Dodgers won or something like that. So, and that's really how you got to play it.
Yeah. Yeah. Walker Buehler was a great teammate after the game. You know, he talked up Gavin. That's got to be hard for Gavin Lux. You know, you're a young guy. He's still never played a full season in the big leagues, and he's been thrown out in center field, a position he's not super familiar with. He's played it for about 3 weeks now, and go out there and making a misplay like that, and that it literally almost cost the Dodgers the game. And honestly, if the Dodgers were down 3-0 right now, you and I would be having a very depressing podcast, because it would be hard to come back from that. You know, that's what Gavin Lux had on his plate. You know, he's feeling that. And for Buehler, a legit superstar, to come out and say, Gavin Lux contributes to this team. Gavin Lux is a very good outfielder. He's in a situation that's hard for him, and he's made great plays. You know, Buehler brought up the double play in the first inning. That was a really nice play by Lux. You know, and Buehler said, you know, he refused to throw Lux under the bus. And he said, I didn't make the pitches I needed to make after that. He wouldn't even throw the umpire under the bus. The umpire cost him too. You know, and Buehler just took it all on and said, no, I'm the guy who's got to make the pitches there. Me and Will Smith should be in control of this game. And I didn't get the pitches done. And, you know, that's a great teammate. And that's ace talk.
Yeah. And the other part too is that we found out that Buehler had gotten sick in San Francisco, not sure exactly what, not sure if he was still feeling those effects. Obviously he didn't bring it up. He's not going to use that, but you would hope that here, if they get to a game 7 or if they need a game 7, that he'll be ready to go and for far move from whatever sickness that was. Just the rest of the game, you know, not too much on the Dodgers side. They got runners on early in the game, never really cashed a man. There was a little bit of a lull later in the game, then they ended up coming through in the 8th inning. On the pitching side, the Dodgers used a lot of pitchers. Julio's still on track to start game 4. If he can give the Dodgers any type of length, that would help out a lot. The Braves, I would imagine, are going with the bullpen game. I'm not sure if they stated exactly how that's going to go, but all signs point to a bullpen game. And it's one of the now, you know, game 3 big win, yes. And it kind of feels like last year, game 3 big win, the big first inning. But if you don't follow it up with the win, you're putting yourself in a tough situation. And like we talked about yesterday, this team's different from last year's team, you know, the Braves team, where if the Dodgers don't follow it up with the win in game 4, it doesn't, you know, you're not feeling that great about coming up here and having to win 3 more.
Yeah. Step 1, win today. Step 2, win today, tomorrow, you know, and that's what they got to do. You know, tomorrow they show up, and all that we know about is game 4, win today. Because yeah, if they can tie this series up, knowing that you've got, you know, Buehler and Scherzer pitching 2 of the last 3 games, you're in a good situation. So Julio needs to come out and shove, you know, in today's game. The offense needs to show up, hopefully continue off what they did. The Turner brothers did not contribute like we needed them to. We're still going to need that this series. But yeah, they need to win today in game 4 and worry about tomorrow.
Yeah, and they need to take advantage when the Braves try to sneak in innings with some of these lower tier relievers, whether it's Jesse Chavez or whoever else these other guys they're throwing out there, because they haven't been able to get hits off the big. You know, Luke Jackson was the guy they got the hit off this game, but some of those lefties, Minter, Matzik, they haven't really been able to touch them. So they got to take advantage when those guys aren't in the game, and hopefully that's what happens. All right, we're going to come back. We're going to talk about just kind of how the mood of Dodgers Twitter was, the mood of Twins Twitter. You know, Josh Donaldson had some words to say, and maybe a little bit about the actual broadcast. So make sure to keep it locked on Dodgers. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar on the market. I got a text from my dad today since they have my old address. And apparently I got a box from Built Bar, so I'm excited to see what it is. But whatever it is, it's probably something that's coming out soon. So I'll let you know if it was something worth your time. But even if not, Built Bars are always worth your time. They got a bunch of different flavors. They're always changing flavors, rotating flavors, but they got a few staples: double chocolate, salted caramel, strawberry, coconut, cherry barcia, just some of those. You can try one and see if you like it. You can get a mixed box and you'll get a bunch of flavors, different flavors, and see which one you like. And the best part about Built Bars is not only do they taste great, but they're also healthy for you. You're getting 17, 18 grams of protein. Your calories are under 180, 4 to 5 grams sugar, 4 to 5 grams net carbs. All great tasting, all healthy for whatever lifestyle you're trying to live. And right now you can go to Built.com and use the promo code LOCK15 for 15% off your next order. That's promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at Built.com. BetOnline is back and better than ever. They got a new web interface for the start of the basketball season. They got more props, more odds, more lines than ever before. And BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. Head to their new updated website on your laptop or mobile device and sign up, and you'll get a 50% welcome bonus if you use the promo code LOCKEDON. That's promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit at BetOnline. From baseball, basketball, football, baseball, postseason, NHL, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, Jeff, this final segment, we got a few things to get into. Dodgers Twitter seemingly in a collective meltdown before that eighth inning. We got Josh Donaldson tweeting about things that he's not really aware of what the meaning is or how the meaning of what he thinks something is has affected his career. And it seemed like from what we heard, or from what I heard since I wasn't watching, a little bit of the broadcast going after Dodger fans in a kind of a certain way. I don't know where you want to start with that, but I'll leave it up to you.
Yeah, let's talk about Josh Donaldson for a minute. First, I want to talk to you about what's called the Dunning-Kruger effect, if you're not familiar with it. It's a I'll read to you from verywellmind.com. The Dunning-Kruger effect is a type of cognitive bias in which people believe that they are smarter and more capable than they really are. And more specifically, the part that affects Donaldson, if I scroll down, the reality is that everyone is susceptible to this phenomenon, and in fact, most of us probably experience it with surprising regularity. People who are genuine experts in one area may mistakenly believe that their intelligence and knowledge carry over into other areas in which they are less familiar. Josh Donaldson and a lot of people, a lot of professional athletes, think that, hey, I'm a world-class athlete, therefore I'm an expert on everything. And specifically in Donaldson's case, I'm a good baseball player, so I know everything about baseball. He doesn't know how to spell analytics, which maybe is the first clue. This whole thing about blaming analytics for stuff, the tweet from Josh Donaldson, he said, "Dodgers war of thinking." I assume he used the word war because war is an analytical term, and he wanted to make it clear that he's not one of those nerds who cares about analytics. It says, opener game one, game three starter, second baseman and center. You have the highest payroll in the game. You don't have a game one starter and an actual center fielder. Wait, you do, but you would rather not. WTF. WTF indeed, Josh Donaldson. The Dodgers have to play somebody at first base because Max Muncy is hurt. Cody Bellinger is the best option there. Yeah, they could have started Matt Beattie at first and Cody Bellinger in center, I guess. But offensively, you put out your best lineup there. And Gavin Lux has been playing center field for 3 or 4 weeks now. You know, it's not like he's never done it before. And the reason they didn't have a game one starter is because they used their game one starter in relief in game five of the NLDS, thinking that he would still be available for game one. I've rehashed, I didn't like that decision either to use Scherzer in that situation. But these things don't happen in a vacuum. And more to the point, blaming analytics for this, you know, people who blaming analytics is the hobgoblin of little minds. To paraphrase a different saying, this is not analytics. Going with Gavin Lux in center field is because he said he's most comfortable there. That's kind of the opposite of analytics. That's, hey, player, you, human being, I, the human being manager, am asking you where you feel most comfortable. Well, manager, human being, I, the human being, because of the reads, I feel more comfortable in center field. Well, as two human beings, let's agree to play you in center field. That's not analytics. That's human beings making the best decision for the team. The fact that Gavin Lux dropped a fly ball doesn't mean it was the wrong decision to play him in center field. Doesn't mean he would ever drop that ball again. Doesn't mean that Chris Taylor or Cody Bellinger would have caught the ball. You know, there was sun out there. It was a hard play. You know, it should have been caught. Yeah. But, you know, it's not an analytical thing. And so, I don't know, like when I read a tweet like that from Josh Donaldson, I just think, man, you are good at baseball and need to leave it at that because you're bad at the other stuff.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just, and the fact of the matter is just tell me you don't pay attention and you're just up, you know, up there talking, because Dave Roberts has mentioned, you know, even going with Julio the other night, how sometimes you have to go off script or you have to go what you think is going to get you done. And that's exactly what they did the other night. I don't think analytics, you know, it wants you to use your starting pitcher from game four in game two in relief when you have, you know, a bunch of other guys there ready to go. So, there's always going to be a war against analytics from people that don't understand what analytics are. It's just like the launch angle argument and everything else. And if Josh Donaldson wants to go through analytics, he should look at the fact that he hit 247 last year. He hasn't hit over 270 since 2017, which means that if you weren't going by analytics because you have other good numbers that make up for the lack of batting average, you probably wouldn't be starting in the major leagues because you're not hitting that great. So it's just, whatever the case is, you know, people don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah. Regardless of how you spell analytics, Josh Donaldson benefits from them.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Dodgers Twitter in general. You know, there was a lot of tweets out there, some more doom and gloom than others. But basically just kind of like, man, I tweet, I don't know. Like, I don't know what this is. I don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, it all kind of shifted and it just, you know, like the Dodgers did in the eighth inning, when that happened, it kind of shifts your thinking. And now you're like, oh, the Dodgers, you know, the path is there again for them to win this series. And, you know, I think for the first time, well, obviously you saw, I think I wasn't completely, you know, like, oh my God, like the Dodgers weren't showing us anything to make us be optimistic about them. And it was, you know, fine to get a little bit of pessimistic, I guess. And now we're all optimistic again. So,
yeah. And it's because the situation is different, you know. If you go down 3-0, only one team has ever come back from that before. You know, there's still a chance, and we would still be talking about how the series isn't over yet if they were down 3-0. But down 2-1, teams come back from that all the time. The Dodgers literally did that against this team last year. You know, so it's a totally different situation. And yeah, you know, optimism is always tempered by realism, and even the most optimistic fans, you know, my approach is I just stopped tweeting. If you look at my timeline, I didn't tweet from about the fourth inning on until Bellinger's home run because I didn't have anything nice to say. So I didn't say anything at all. You know, it was, you know, I don't need Twitter as a therapy session to go through my grief, but I don't begrudge the people who do, you know? And so if I had been tweeting, it would have been frustrated tweets. And for me, maybe the one thing that is maybe a little different about me than a lot of Dodgers Twitter is I don't jump straight to, like, I got messages from people, this team has no heart, the Braves just want it more. It's like, no, the Dodgers want to win. You know, Justin Turner's not sucking because he doesn't want to win. If anybody, Justin Turner didn't get to celebrate on the field with the Dodgers last year the way everybody else did. Turner wants to win a World Series more than anybody, you know? It has nothing to do with desire. It has nothing to do with intestinal fortitude. It has to do with sometimes they suck, you know, and they're struggling and going through slumps. And so that's the part. If I'm being honest, that's more why I didn't tweet during that time, because I don't know that I have the self-control to keep from being snarky with people who think they understand the motives and the think they can read people's minds and know the mindsets of everybody involved and all that, when really sometimes you just struggle. Sometimes you strike out, you get beat by the pitcher. Sometimes you strike out because you made a crappy swing, but it's almost never because you didn't want to win badly enough or because, you know, any other sort of mental weakness that people want to chalk it up to.
And here's the fact of the matter is what I want these people to kind of realize is What team do you see out there that is continuing to be upbeat and, you know, have some swag and be like that when they're down and they're not playing well and they're not scoring runs and they're frustrated? You know, nobody's out there. We saw the Padres self-destruct earlier this year. They were, you know, up and up and up in emotions and stuff like that. The Braves, who have been up and up in emotions so far this year. And remember last year, you remember that Braves in the early part of the series, hopping over the railings for every hit and going crazy. And, you know, that's how it is when you're winning. And when you're not winning, you're not going to be hopping over the railing because you don't have anything to celebrate. So it goes hand in hand with that. And it kind of leads me to another part to that of the next part of Dodger fans. And, you know, they get a lot of flack. And, you know, sometimes, I guess, rightfully so, but, you know, not really. Dodger Stadium is one of the biggest stadiums, or the biggest stadium in baseball, 56,000. You know, they didn't sell out yesterday. I saw people complaining or, you know, talking about that. It's a Tuesday at 2 p.m., you know, in a time where, and we're still in a pandemic, in a time where people can't take off work because everyone's already short-staffed because of the pandemic. You know, there's a lot of excuses or whatever, you know, there are reasons more so than excuses that I would put on. But when it came down to it in that eighth inning, the Dodgers fans were up on their feet getting crazy unprompted before they even got the home run from Bellinger. Before the first base hit of that inning, they were up trying to give the Dodgers some life. And, you know, I'm not going to say that's what led to it, but I'm sure it helps having everyone behind you and like that. And, you know, Cody's getting Cody chants up there when he's at the plate. And, you know, it's just a different feeling. And for Dodger fans, you know, you watch these games in Boston, and maybe Boston fans are that much crazier probably than Dodger fans. They live and die with every pitch a little bit more. But when it comes down to it, for Dodger fans, when you need them to get loud, when you need them to try to get you into the game, they're going to be there. And we heard how loud it was when they got rewarded with everything that they got there in the eighth inning.
Yeah, absolutely. And this game didn't sell out. Who cares? You know, the attendance at this game was higher than the attendance at any other postseason game this season that wasn't played at Dodger Stadium. The Dodgers have a bigger stadium. They have more seats to fill to sell out. If Dodger Stadium held 38,000 like Fenway Park does, it would have sold out. You know, selling out this stadium, yeah. You know, it sucks to not sell out a playoff game, a 2 p.m. playoff game. We went over that yesterday. Why are they playing at 2 p.m.? Because, you know, but, you know, not selling out a 2 p.m. game, only putting 51,000 people in the stands or whatever. Oh, boo-hoo. You know, the fans who were there were loud. They were into it and they got a great show. And guess what? They're going to sell out tomorrow because they saw people who thought about going today. They saw and said, oh man, I wish I'd been there. I better be there tomorrow. That's how you fill the stadium, is by putting a great team on the field like the Dodgers have done for the last 10 years.
And I think you said on Twitter that the prices already went up for tomorrow's game, which means there's more demand because people want to go. And it's a 5 o'clock game tomorrow, so that, you know, also helps with that. But yeah, I think they said on the broadcast they were showing Dodger fans leaving, which, you know, I feel is kind of a cheap shot because, or I don't know, people probably feel that they were calling out Dodger fans. And they show people leaving in other games too, so I don't want to say this with too much bravado without knowing the exact situation. But you know what? People are going to leave games early. You can't do anything about that. The fact of the matter is the Dodgers were there, whatever, 50,000, 48,000, whatever it was there in the eighth inning. They were there supporting, cheering, you know, leading them on, and it ended up working out. And tomorrow, guess what? There's going to be another 50 to 55,000 people there cheering and trying to lead them to victory.
Yeah, if you only counted Dodger fans who showed up on time and stayed for the whole game, guess what? They'd still lead the league in attendance every year. Dodger fans show up, and the fact that some people left early, yeah, you know what? I feel bad for those people. I do a little bit judge those individual people, but I don't judge Dodger fans because of that. You know, if you pay that much money to go to a playoff game, stay for the whole game. You know, even if just for the fact, hey, I get to sit in Dodger Stadium, the greatest place in the world. Stay for the whole game, but that's on them. That's not on Dodger fans, because Dodger fans, like you said, 48,000 people were still in the stands when the Dodgers were down by 3 runs and not showing many signs of life, and they got treated to a show. And guess what? They're not going to leave early tomorrow because they're going to remember tonight. That's how you get fans to stay. Eric Gagne used to get fans to stay, you know, because they wanted to see Eric Gagne. The Dodgers in 2019, everybody stayed because they had that late inning magic, you know? And so that's how you get people to stay. But when you got a stadium that big, Dodgers would lead the league in attendance no matter what, even if you only count the people who saw every pitch of the game, and anything else is just jealousy.
Yeah. But, yeah, you know, I'll stand for Dodger fans when I need to. Jeff, you got anything else from this game that you are or looking forward to head to tonight's game?
No, they just got to win again, you know. Hopefully Julio is on, and hopefully the offense shows up because, you know, I want him to do another happy podcast tomorrow. I don't want a sad podcast. I don't want to be down 3-1 because that's hard to come back from. They need to win today. Not a must win, but it's a need to win, and that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, I've done a down 3-1 to the Braves podcast before, and
I might make you do it again tomorrow on yourself on your own if they do lose. So they need to win for your sake.
Yeah, let's go offense. Let's go Dodgers. Looking forward to that. Thank you for making us your first listen every morning. Locked On Dodgers, wherever you get your podcasts, or on YouTube, all free of charge. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about Game 4, hopefully a win, tie series, and a best-of-3 coming up after that. Now make your second listen, Locked On MLB with Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call him Sully. He brings you his unique perspective on the major leagues past and present. It's also free and available on all platforms. That's going to do it for us today. Make sure to subscribe to Locked On Dodgers on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to follow us on social media, Twitter and Instagram, at Locked On Dodgers. Jeff is on Twitter at Snydog. I'm at Vince Samperio. You can get a hold of us on all those accounts through DM, or you can send us an email, lockedondodgers@gmail.com, or you can leave us a voicemail or send us a text at 323-863-5625. We're here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be with us. So when you get in your car or if you're at home, tell your smart device, play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. Have a good one.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.